The following episode of The Trumpet contains a scene featuring explicit material. The Trumpet is not an explicit podcast, but the scene featured on this episode contains language or situations some may find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions. As always, I am your host, Robert Jean Pelleccio. And this month we are featuring, as she described herself, a New York playwright who is Philly-friendly, Catherine Weingarten. Thank you so much for coming on to talk to me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
In a little bit we'll be chatting about her quite interesting and unexpected piece, Karate Hottie. But it was definitely a well-written and surprising piece, to say the least. But before we get there, I was wondering if I could just ask about your theater history.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, what is your theater history?
Let's see. I come from an acting background. I guess like a lot of playwrights. But
that's what I've noticed kind of is the trend is a lot of playwrights have either started out or have dabbled in performance themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I did a lot of acting growing up. I did a lot of acting summer camps. And then I undergrad, I went to Bennington College and I went there with the intent of kind of studying theater broadly, but also preparing for a career as an actor.
Right.
And I got there, and I actually did a 24-hour play festival, and I put my name in as an actor and as a playwright, and they picked me as a playwright. And I did it, and it was so much fun. And I had way more fun, writing and writing really trashy situations and stuff, and it just felt really right. And then also being an actress, I was definitely feeling a lot of pressure to be really hot and stuff, and all the parts were hot girl number four.
Right.
Number two, I was this is maybe not for me. And playwriting, I guess it was more focused on who you expressing yourself and your creativity. So I found it a bit more empowering.
So did you begin writing about how far into your acting career did you begin writing?
They kind of came together during Bennington. So I was a child actor. I started acting when I was a little mini thing.
Oh,
and
same.
Then I think my acting career kind of died after Bennington. That was the end of it. Playwriting career started my freshman year of college. So there was a time when I had more than one spell. That was exciting.
Well, definitely looking at your website, it definitely looks like you've got quite a few ideas and concepts you've explored. I need to ask real quick. I know we're going to be focusing on Karate Hottie today, but when I'm not podcasting and I'm not teaching, I am running shifts at a Starbucks. So I think you know what play I want to ask you about. So two things. Number one, okay, so for the listeners, this can be found on CatherinePlaywright.ninja. I see a play, one male, two females, an angsty girly comedy called I Want a Unicorn Frappe. So two things come to mind. Number one, I remember the anguish of the unicorn, and I never thought I'd have to think about her again. But also, were you concerned about the legality of using the term Frappuccino since it's trademarked?
No, I didn't even think about that. I guess I just say frap or whatever, because it's just cooler. I like to abbreviate things, but I guess that's good.
I only joke because I have a coworker who I like to joke with him by calling it a frappe, and he is very passionate about the fact that Starbucks fought really hard for this trademark on this term, Frappuccino, and it's their word. So what I want to get is good. I'll say, all right, I'm going to make a frappe. But I have to... did you have a particularly negative experience with the unicorn that inspired the angst of this piece?
No, it wasn't negative. It all came about because, I just finished up grad school at Ohio University. And it's in Athens, Ohio, which is kind of the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And for so long, I'd heard about the unicorn frap coming out, and like I just like really girly kind of sugary things.
Girl,
and
me too. So
and I was very excited for this drink to come out, and I was like so ready. And actually, happened. It was like during our Playwrights Fest at school, so I was really busy. But I was like, you know what? I'll find time. I'll go to a Starbucks, and I go to like our sketchy Starbucks within the student center. And they're like, we're not affiliated with the unicorn frap. So I ended up,
you know what? It was
like
probably, it was probably like a licensed, store, like one of the, like a Barnes and Noble type thing. Oh man, that's funny. Yeah. Did you ever get to have one?
No, that's why the play came out. I was so upset, that I was like, do is channel this into my work and like make a play like in memory of this drink that I never got to try.
Yeah, it was an interesting time for us. They have dialed back their social media a little bit. I don't want to invoke the siren and the coffee god's anger, but to offer an apology on behalf of us, what happened was they sent each store about 10 packets of each flavor for the unicorn and said, make this last for 10 days. And then they went completely ham on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and the app and get your pictures of the unicorn frappuccino and all this. And then we got bombarded on day one and two, and then it was gone. So the next few that they did, they definitely, dialed it back a little with the promotion. Finished the crystal ball frappuccino, which was it was a thing. Don't question.
That's amazing.
No, it was actually pretty good. It was a peach tea frappuccino.
Ooh.
With peach whipped cream and candy gem topping, and each drink got a different color topping to tell your fortune. So, I don't know what the next crazy one is going to be, but now that you know somebody in the know, I will make sure that I'll make sure we get you set up with the next mythical one.
Thank you, kind of you.
So yeah, like I said, I'm very impressed by this repertoire because we have playwrights come to us from all walks of playwriting, whether this is their first piece or whether this is their 50th piece. So, I never know what to expect in terms of, variety. So I usually like to ask, what is your general writing style? But it's looking like through here, you tend to lean to comedy a little bit. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
definitely.
If Karate Hottie is any indication, you should definitely continue on that path because you are very good at it. There were a lot of moments in Karate Hottie, I can say, where jaw-dropping, and you'll hear on the recording, there's a lot of me laughing, and there's a lot of us reacting to lines that we didn't expect. Have you ever written any other style besides comedy, or is that pretty much you've established that's your roadhouse?
I think that's like what I do. And I don't know. I think part of it is like because I'm like Jew friendly. I think I have like the self-deprecating, neurotic kind of humor. Like it's
I was going to ask you about that, and I'll touch on it later when we get to the play. But there's a character in Karate Hottie that made me wonder, this has to be written by a Jewish person in order for this to be so specific.
Yeah, no, I am Jewish.
Very nice.
But I guess in terms of your question about comedy, I think I try to put layers on it. Like, I think with this play, it's a little bit more of like a dark comedy. And sometimes I have plays that are a little tear-jerker comedy, or there's some sadness in it. Like, I don't want to be like basic. Like, I like to mix it up a little bit, like within comedy.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's always the sign of a good piece. A lot of pieces that we've looked at, I mean, because we've looked at dramas and comedies in this series, and I have found the most rip-roaring, funny, slapstick comedy always has some heart at the middle of it, or, you know, sometimes you got to dig a little for it, but other times it's right there spelled out. And I think that kind of, I would say catching you off guard with that emotion is a very powerful tactic that you clearly know how to use. So without further ado, could you please give our listeners just a brief little setup of what the hell Karate Hottie is? And I say that very affectionately because we all very much enjoyed that aspect of the story. And if you could also just set up the scene that we're going to be listening to.
Yeah. So Karate Hottie, it's a dark comedy about a really like angsty, tough little 16-year-old chick who falls for her karate teacher, who is actually has like a very serious girlfriend. And in the play, we sort of watch this kind of illegal, kind of sketchy relationship unfold, and it kind of messes with everyone's life in the process. And yeah, it's a comedy. And and for the scene, we're going to look at the second scene. And Dart and John, who are the main characters, they are at this Karate Hottie tournament, which is kind of for like hot teenage karate chicks. And John has taken Dart to the tournament, and they're in this hotel room, and something happened the night before, and they kind of have to deal with that the next morning.
All right, let's take a listen. Scene 2. Your sheets are cool. Same hotel, next morning. John and Dart aren't really looking at each other. Their clothing is thrown all over the floor.
So.
Morning. Forgot to say before, but I like your sheets. Mutant Ninja Turtles, nice.
Yeah. I hate hotel sheets. Not soft enough. Like to bring my own, you know? I always wanted to be the blue one. Had a very cool voice.
Pink one was better, because she was the only girl, you know, and she was always getting underestimated.
I think you're thinking of Power Rangers. There's no pink Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Well, you suck. I'm creative. In my head, there's a pink Ninja Turtle, and she fucking rocks.
I should,
John puts on his clothing while Dart stares at him.
Whatevs, your muscles are cool.
Thanks. That's kind. I work out a lot, though. Guess it comes with the job.
I wanted to say this last night, but I thought it would sound dumb, but, like, I can see us one day, you know, and we're wearing these matching sweaters and shit. They say, like, Dart and John forever. And, like, the 4 is the actual number 4. Doesn't that sound slamming? Like, it's an actual 4.
Interesting. Fun wordplay.
Sounds nice, right? You know, tomorrow we could go to this cool neighborhood spot called Amish Pizza Happy Family Pizza Place. They give you pizza just big enough for 2, and they don't care if you make out in the store, even though they're Amish.
As much as I do appreciate pizza, maybe that's not the best idea. Like, listen, Dart, I don't think that that kind of thing should happen again. Like, it's just not right or whatever. Like, you're pretty young and stuff. I tried to stop it, okay? But I guess things kept escalating and...
Want to have some of the drinks in the mini fridge? If you put water in them, they think you didn't even drink them. I had peppermint schnapps once with my mom one time, and it was super fancy. They had, like, pieces of peppermint in it, and we drank a whole bottle, and it was amazing. And I think you should have some because it will make your life a whole lot better in a lot of ways.
I'm good.
Okay.
I just I don't think this should happen again.
You're pissing me off. The more you say it, the worse it sounds.
We can get burgers tonight to celebrate after you win the tournament. When we're on the road, they have this place, Fantasy Burger, on the turnpike on Route 66. You can put, like, ice cream or marshmallows on your burger because it's like a fantasy or whatever. I think you'd dig it.
You know what fantasy I want to put on my burger?
Chocolate?
No.
S'mores?
Nope, your guesses suck.
Fine, well, I give up then.
If I could have a fantasy on my burger, I'd put you on it. And stuff.
You want to eat me?
I want to put you on a burger and eat you because then you'd be mine and perfect in my fucking fantasy. That's the whole point of a fantasy. God, read a dictionary. I do.
We're not a couple, okay, Dart? We'll never be a couple. I'm like your teacher, okay? I'm like an adult, okay? Not like you. You're a mini person. I'm your teacher. I should help you, not date you.
What if dating did help me? What if dating you made me an adult? And also, what the fuck is a mini person?
It means you're too freaking young, okay, Dart? You're not at the level I'm at yet, okay? You don't know what it's like to have responsibility and property and values.
This hotel sucks. I'm gonna rate it 2 stars when I get to the internet and get to their website, and then no one is gonna fucking wanna come here because they're just gonna sense how it fucking ruins everything.
Come on, Dart. You should probably start stretching and prep for the tournament. Whenever I start a karate class, what do I say?
I don't know. Shut up.
I say before a big tournament or competition, take a deep breath and get ready to engage in something real. Something real that could change your life.
I don't understand why it can't happen again.
You know why. We both know why. If I say it, it's just gonna get you mad, which it seems like most all kinds of things do right now.
I'm sorry, I have a lot of issues. Sorry, I like to punch toilets and express my feelings.
It's kind of hot, you know?
Really?
I mean, fuck. Hot in an asexual way. Like, for example, the sun is hot because it's just bright all the time. I'm not sure what that means. I'm sorry, okay? I hope last night will be something we both forget about within the next 3 days or so. Like a little blip. We can talk more in the car about it tonight if you want.
Fine.
And I'm glad you like my sheets.
No one cannot like that sheet. Can I kiss you?
No.
You sure? I won't use tongue.
Yes.
Very sure? I won an award for kissing in the alternate summer camp I went to in New Jersey in 6th grade.
No, just stop. Good luck today on the tournament, Dart. Know you can win it. Can't wait to see you up on that stage in that big karate hottie sash and crown glowing representing John's House of Pain Karate Studio for Kids. While I take pictures from afar. Wow.
I hate you.
And we're back. So a lot to unpack there with that scene. I have a lot of questions about this play and a lot of good comments about this play as well. But I want to ask just first off, I think the biggest question that we left this piece with was where did the idea for this karate hottie tournament come from?
I'm not sure exactly. I think it connected to the title, because this is one of those plays where I came up with a title and I'm like, how do I make the play earn this trashy title? Because the play was just really doing it. The title was just really doing it for me.
Right, right.
And I'm like, well, Bert is kind of this karate hottie. She's like a little hot karate chick, but like, how can it be more than just like, you know, her as a character being like a hot karate chick? Like, is there a way to sort of bleed the title into the play so it's like, it's so connected? And I
right.
think I went like, oh, there's a tournament. How can, like, what is, could it be a karate hottie tournament? Like, and then I think as like a comedic writer, like I like disparate things and putting them together. Like, I'm definitely not like a realistic kind of writer. Like, I like things that are like really trashy, and the idea of like it's a tournament for women, but it's like, what are stereotypes that go with women? Like, oh, maybe being hot,
right.
Like how, like female athlete, but you have to be hot. Like, I don't know. I just found that kind of funny.
What's interesting to me is like that there would be moments in this piece that my brain would kind of freeze for a moment, and I'd have to ask myself, I'd have to do a couple, like, logical cartwheels to get through it. And then I would always remember in the end that, you know, one of the glorious things about a comedy is that the world that you create is not necessarily 100% grounded in logic.
Yeah.
So just like you said, this disproportionate idea that there would be a karate tournament that is also, you know, part voyeur beauty pageant type thing is, you know, in essence, pretty damn funny.
Thank you.
You got it. So yeah, there's a lot of really interesting themes that, you know, if you cut about, you know, 18% of the dialogue of this piece, it becomes a very hard-hitting, dramatic, you know, groundbreaking story. And yet you were able to take this subject matter that, you know, is very complex and make it hysterical. I mean, I have, there were a couple lines that really stood out for me, if you don't mind me
throwing
them at you. And you'll hear my voice. Well, actually, no, you won't hear my voice on the feedback. You'll hear in the feedback that I said this, but I think my favorite line in the play is, I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between Dart and Shalom, the character I mentioned earlier. There's a scene where she first finds out about this, you know, this kind of illicit thing, and everybody, you know, and everybody in the play, apart from Dart and John, you know, seem obviously incensed by this whole concept. But there's one line that really stood out, which is, well, if you dated a married man with kids, that's just, like, awful. That's like extra ranch-flavored hobag slut of chips. I fucking lost it at that line. And there's another one she has later. It's a very, I forget what page it is, but it's a very, very hard-hitting, pretty serious monologue she gives Dart. And it's, you know, for lack of a better term, it's one of those kind of, you know, more serious moments of the piece. And it ends with her saying something along the lines of, you know, she throws hobag back, you know, into it at the very end. And you're immediately pulled back into, that's right, this is absurd. So I guess I can ask, did you face any challenges trying to blend kind of the more serious elements, the more hard-hitting thinker elements of this piece with those fast-paced comedic exchanges?
Yeah, I definitely think it was challenging. I know for me, like, sometimes the drama kind of makes me a little nervous. Like, I get a little self-conscious and I'm like, oh, well, maybe, like, I don't know. I'm like, I'm not as good at this. I'm maybe a little better with, like, the trashy dialogue. And sometimes it's like I'll write out a scene and it's like it'll feel really, it can get a little like melodramatic, you know, and right. It just doesn't feel, it's usually like hearing it out loud, I can feel it. I can feel when I'm sort of pushed into like, you know, just like over the top. And then that's what's so nice about like comedy. It sort of can calm it down. It can, I don't know, whenever I can add a little like trashiness to a scene, suddenly it starts feeling more truthful to me.
I really gotta say, I love the idea of owning trashiness. It is an inspirational concept that I really want to carry with me in my everyday life.
Yeah, I definitely think that's important to me, like, as a writer, and definitely carries throughout my work. It's a lot of trashiness.
Well, another thing that I thought was really interesting about the piece was, you know, I think the characters definitely were believable, but what was interesting is they spanned all ages. I mean, you've got Dart and Shalom, who are on the younger end of the scale, and then you have John and Meredith, who are kind of that older generation. So I thought that it definitely, it resounded with me, the age, because all of the ages of the actors were more or less equal, but I could definitely hear in the text you know, what generation each person was from. And John, you have a real challenge with him, I noticed, because John's whole arc, it seems to me, is he's in this sort of, would you say, arrested development between youthfulness and adulthood?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
So what was your biggest challenge approaching that character in particular?
I think it's hard just because a lot of my work is kind of like about women, about young women. And the things he does in the play, like, it's almost like being an actor. You're like, oh my God, like I have to play that part. Like, right. But I'm such a like nice person. Like I wouldn't do that. And it's like, it's the same as a playwright. You have to be like, okay, well, why would he do that? And what does that feel like? And why, how does he justify it? And like, you know, the play's still in development. I don't know if it's fully there.
Right.
Something I think could be better. And I think, I think it's one of those things that I would figure out in rehearsal with an actor. Like, it's definitely, it's an interesting part because it does piss off actors.
Yeah.
Like, I think actors are like, I don't want to deal with this part. But I think if an actor is like, is excited by my aesthetic and is like down to like help me figure out this part, like it could get even more clear, like his motivations and like what he's up to.
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting disconnect that I have with the character because, like you said, if I'm being quite candid, the character pisses me off. However, I believe him. I believe that he has a struggle and I believe that he's going about it the way that he thinks is right. And I think that kind of dichotomy is very fascinating for a playwright, a director, and an actor to all have to tackle. Because Lord knows I've played characters in the past that, you know, I would not necessarily agree with. You know, to go back many years ago, my artistic director, Lauren M. Shover, played opposite me in The Shape of Things. And if you're familiar with that play, if anyone listening is familiar with that play, the character of Evelyn is, in the end, arguably not a great character. But Lauren found a real sense of purity and honesty with that character that she was able to play. She didn't play the character as, I'm a villain and I'm going to hurt you. She played the character from her perspective as, you know, justified. But it was to the point where, you know, to shout out to my grandmother loves Lauren in every way, shape, or form, but leaving the theater, she was just like, man, I did not like you up there as the character. Like, and she like completely separated that, but she's like, I love you. I love everything about you. I don't want to see you hurt my grandson. It's just that beautiful sense of, but it's okay. I think things have calmed down in that rivalry. In fact, my grandparents actually shared their famous Italian pepperoni bread recipe with Lauren late last year. So that's, I think all is forgiven.
That's nice.
But like I said, you know, I tend to get off topic a bit, but it is definitely a challenge to have to tackle that. And I feel like sometimes as a playwright, you have to tackle that because it makes for a compelling, challenging piece. And I think that's what you have here.
Thank you. Yeah, I think in general, like one of my obsessions as a writer is just like people making bad choices. And, you know, specifically a lot of like my female characters, like I love to watch chicks do like dumb stuff or like mess up their life and then, you know, see what happens. So, John's definitely one of those characters who's like figuring it out and a little unlikable in the process.
So one more development question. And I usually start by asking this, but I kind of wanted to dive in right away with this play because I had so many thoughts about this piece just swirling around in my head. But at the end of the day, what triggered this piece into existence? What was the main inspiration for telling John and Dart's story?
Well, it's based on a real story. It's based on a friend of mine who actually had an affair with her fencing teacher.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and it was just one of my friends from undergrad, and she told me her story, and she was so not apologetic about it. And she was actually still seeing the guy at the time. And I just remember her telling me this story and like me coming into school, like barely having any relationship experience, like kind of nerdy and prudy, and my friend telling me this, and I'm just like, oh my God, like what have I been doing? She's living this wild life. And I just remember, because I had all these preconceived notions of like, oh, cheating is bad, this is awful. And then she tells me this story, and like, I couldn't really be fully honest with her because, you know, she's a tough chick. She did fencing. Right. Like, she could beat me up. So I had to kind of be supportive, and it really pushed me to have to like grapple with this. And I was like, this is awful. But at the same time, like, she doesn't care and she seems happy. So like, what brings someone into this? Like, why is this so hot? And I feel like I was in this position almost like an audience member where I'm like, how do I make sense of this? And I think that's a good place to be as the playwright, because I'm like, I just need to freaking like write this and figure this out. Like, because like, I want to know what she went through. Like, I want to understand the story.
What are you hoping that audiences will take away from having this story told?
I don't know. I guess I hope that it kind of humanizes like people that maybe make bad choices. And I hope maybe the audience will like root for it and not root for it. And like ask big questions and, yeah, I don't know. It's a hard question.
Yeah. Sorry to just bring that one on you.
No, it's good for me. It's like hazing me.
That's a good way to put it. So
yeah,
I noticed that this play, just from your website, I noticed that just like a previous play that we just recently talked about, this play is not being heard for the first time by our group. I noticed that there were some other development areas, Ohio University Players, annual Seabury Quinn Play Festival. So what was it about our program that, sang out to you to get another ear on this?
I think I saw that you guys were like Philly friendly first, and I'm kind of, I'm like obsessed with the Philly theater scene. Like, it's actually one of my dreams to have like a professional production in Philly.
Oh, wow.
Because a lot of my work is very PA friendly. Like, this play is like set in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah. There were a lot of references to Bryn Mawr and,
yeah,
like I think Scranton might've come up at some point. Like there's a lot of local PA things that I grew up around that, I think, don't they go to Lancaster at one point?
Yeah. So, well, yeah. And I said, you know, I'm from Ardmore, PA.
Right.
So yeah, I think that was the first thing. I was like, oh my God. And then the program just sounded so exciting that you guys were like interested in development and could like send me some thoughts. I don't know. It's like a service to playwrights. So thank you.
You got it.
It's exciting. Glad you picked me.
Oh, thank you. We're glad to have gotten the chance to check out this piece. And I'm definitely looking forward to, I want to look through your catalog and, please let me know when the Unicorn Frappe piece is up, because
yeah,
I want to dive into that so bad. So one more question on Karate Hottie, and then we'll kind of wrap up on a fun little question. But where would you like to take this piece next, and what are you most hoping to do with it in terms of development?
My goal with Karate Hottie, I think it's in a really good place. Like, I think it's in a place where it's either like in a workshop place or a professional place.
Right.
You mean in terms of development, like a certain company, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. But yeah, so I'm hoping, what I would really want is just to get it on its feet and see, yeah, watch some actors like make some choices and not just have another reading of it. take it to the next level. And I think in terms of development, I am really curious about John, and I want to keep finding the nuances in that character and really understanding where he's coming from. And then I'm also curious, like, from a plot perspective, like, if there's, like, enough stuff going on, if I need a little more fireworks and stuff, or if it's working as it is. But I think I'll probably need to, like, see it on its feet to really know the answer.
Well, I wish you the best of success with it, and I hope that this play sees the light of day soon, because I would like to be there to watch it come to fruition.
Thank you.
And before
hope that happens.
Oh, it'll, you got this. And to wrap up, I always like to end the show with a fun little theater question. And I have kind of a weird one today, but I want to see where your mind goes with it. If you could pick two female characters from any play to pit them against Dart in a Karate Hottie tournament, which characters would you pick and why?
Oh my God.
Any genre, any year, any two plays.
Okay, let's see. I'm just going to go with, like, my first thoughts, because they're weird. Okay, my first thing that went into my head was, like, Ophelia, but I don't...
I feel like Ophelia could hold her own in a Karate Hottie tournament.
Yeah, I think that would be, like... I think Dart could kind of bully Ophelia, because she's, like, a sensitive soul. So that could be, like, a little funny and sad. And then I was thinking of... my favorite playwright is, like, Wendy Wasserstein. And in her play, Uncommon Women and Others, I'm blanking on a character's name. There's one character who's, like, super tough and definitely kind of, like, in the closet. And she's kind of famous because she has this speech about period blood. And she, like, encourages everyone to, like, try, like, tasting their own period blood. And I'm forgetting her name, but I feel like her and Dart could, like, be BFFs and also, like...
I can see that.
A really good fight.
When you remember what that character's name is, please let me know, because I want to.
Yeah.
I want to look up this monologue.
Yeah, I will let you know.
Thank you. Well, Catherine, thank you again so much for submitting your piece to us, and thank you again for taking the time out of your busy day to chat with me today.
Yeah, of course, it was fun.
Thank you. Well, that's all we have for this month. Remember, if you are an aspiring playwright or an accomplished playwright or anything in between and you would like a piece heard, please, please, please send it to erpsubmissions@gmail.com. Remember, every story deserves to be heard, so join our elephant herd today. Until next time, this is Robert Jean Pelleccio. Bye!